And then so now I think the problem is that we somehow, like, you know, the modernization and industrialization, you know, push us toward the kind of develop this overly left brain centered way of living, you know, like 9-to-5 jobs, and you know, you're plugged into technology all the time, and you are disconnected from your body, you know. So that kind of modern way of life created this imbalance, and that somehow, like, modern men and women become ones that are disconnected from our instinct, disconnected from our intuitive knowing, you know, and intuitive knowing as to, like, what is right and wrong, and it also applies to our sense of morality.
You're listening to the Wake Up Podcast with Alex Fetsky, the place where the most dynamic thinkers and practitioners in the world drop truth bombs and contrarian viewpoints to help you become the best version of yourself. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. Back by popular demand is liberation psychologist and Bitcoiner Nozomi Hayase. We had a conversation just over 8 months ago now, which is one of the more listened to episodes. Her comments inspired me to delve deeper into the Remnant series at the time and really understand the parasitic nature of psychopathic humans. She's back on the show for a couple episodes that dive into her recent piece, The Networked Messiah. And what's more, we dig into the masculine and feminine archetypes, their shadows in Jungian terms, and what's happened to the world with respect to the wounded versions of each energy that it's subject to. This is an episode and a mini series that will really challenge the shit out of you. Hands down, one of my favorites. Follow Nozomi's work on Twitter and her Substack. The links are in the show notes. And remember to subscribe to the Wake Up Podcast for more. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Wake Up Podcast. Nozomi, thank you for joining me again. It's been almost 6 months, huh?
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. The what prompted me this time was your recent piece, make sure I got the name right, so Bitcoin, the Networked Messiah. So I thought it was quite thought-provoking. There was a couple pieces that I wanted to dig into, in particular the relationship between masculine and feminine. So let's dive straight in. I'll throw it over to you to tell me what inspired the piece, and we can dig in.
Yeah. So my latest piece, I mean, it's about basically kind of finding God or divine or the source of legitimacy within ourselves. So I found that the Bitcoin is it's a kind of way to allow us to become, you know, each person to become individually sovereign. And what does that mean? You know, that basically means that we would withdraw all trust that we place in the outside, you know, whether that is religious authority or politicians or the banks or, representative democracy or anything, you know. So that process kind of, for me, what I found is that ultimately at the end of it, what kind of, for most of us, hold the position of authority is that this religious figure or religious authority or our relationship to God or divine, you know. So I found earlier times that people talked about how Bitcoin free us from banks, central banks, or Bitcoin free us from this system of representation, politicians. And now I think that I'm seeing the narrative in this space has moved into talking about God, talking about our relationship to the, you know, the divine, basically. So that's kind of made me kind of explore how Bitcoin help us to do that. And one of the things that I found is that in the existing culture, you know, this fiat culture, there is the overemphasis on the masculine element. And what I mean by masculine element is that it's the left brain dominant kind of thinking. And then when I say that the masculine and the feminine, as I described in my article, that don't really, I don't mean as, you know, something that is presented at the physical level. Like, you know, it's more like the attributes that are associated with archetype of masculine and feminine. So what that means is that we all, whether you are men or women, we all have all aspects. So, you know, it's not that, you know, if you are born, if you are a man, that you don't have the feminine qualities that, that, that are represented by the feminine divinity. But, you know, so it's the totality of psyche that Jung calls it, perhaps, that we all have both attributes. And somehow in our, modern culture, there has been imbalance between the two, archetypes. So then, and that kind of created, destructive effect, in my opinion. And both sides, actually, you know, the feminine and the masculine attribute, if they are expressed in a healthy way, they offer gift. You know, these are something that we need. And then the masculine, for instance, is associated with logics and rationality, or the valuation, you know, categorization, analysis, you know, and whereas the feminine archetypes are more associated with intuition, feeling, emotions, or ability to see the bigger picture. And we need to have both. And the what's important is basically to have a balance between the two. So when the balance, and right now, as I said, it's the overemphasis on the left function of the brain. So that kind of need to be rebalanced, I guess. And in my article, I kind of more focused on the psychological archetypical dimension of things, like saying that the goddess versus God, you know, masculine God versus feminine God. But the research in neurology has provided the psychological underpinnings of unconscious, basically, what we talk, unions, you know, what psychologists talked about the unconscious. And what they discovered is that we have, you know, two brains, basically, right hemisphere and then left hemisphere. And then they both have a different functions. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there is split brain research. Are you familiar with this?
Spirit brain?
Yes, split brain research. So basically the
split brain.
The okay. researchers yeah. Wanted to find out that this wire called the corpus callosum, that's the bundle of nerves that connect both hemispheres, right side mm-hmm. and left side. And then when that wire is cut, basically the patients, start to, basically there are like two people living inside of us, living in one brain. And then the left side is associated with the logics and the speech. So it's the brain that speaks. And then right side hemisphere understand the language, but it doesn't speak. It's mm-hmm, so then, you know, basically the patient whose wire was cut, that they, you know, there was this kind of confusion, you know, between two hemispheres. And then they expressed that, you know, there's somebody else living, a stranger living inside of me. And I find it very interesting. Yeah.
So before we get into, I guess mm-hmm. what you're saying there is the masculine feminine mm-hmm. archetypical split is also representative in the physical nature of the way the brain functions with its different exactly, hemispheres, right.
But the fact so, that we both have two hemispheres, you know, whether you're men or women, right? So we have, you know, both.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So maybe before we get stuck into the brain stuff, I wanted to pull up a couple things here. I was mm-hmm. I was taking some notes while you were talking. So
okay,
you mentioned religious authority and right. this move towards personal sovereignty, potentially mm-hmm. moving us away from external authorities, right? Whether they be the state or religion, yes. etc. Now,
right.
maybe a counterpoint to this is, mm-hmm. are you familiar with Claire Graves' work, Spiral Dynamics? I think we may have
a little bit. I mean, not in vaguely. Detail. I mean, yeah, okay. I have a general idea of what it is. Yeah.
So the basic notion is that mm-hmm. human beings and macro collectives of human beings, so society, evolve in a spiral, and each layer or each level of the spiral is kind of has different values hierarchies. So you start with beige, which is survival, then purple is like tribal, then red is like dominant and power god, blue is structure and order, etc. Yeah. So the basic premise here is that as we evolve, each layer represents a building block, and the idea is not to discard or to remove a building block,
exactly,
but to integrate the building block.
And then, so, in a sense, one build on the other, right? It's kind of a
correct
the basis, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so they're all kind of like foundations for the subsequent layer. So I think one of the difficulties we have in the world today is that we've kind of moved so far away from respecting the foundations that humanity has been built upon. We just want to discard everything.
And
get rid of it. So this is where I think there's a writer that I really respect. His name is Jer, and he writes a lot about masculine frame. And he has a good quote. He says, what's happened in the modern world is we've replaced God with short for government, right? Religion is actually like an important building block, and this is something that's taken me a long time to appreciate. Is when I was in my 20s, I was you know, atheist and fuck religion, fuck order, fuck everything, and it was all about you know, me. I'm my own God. I'm my own sovereign God. But there seems to be something about, and this is the way I differentiate it. This nuance is earned authority versus authority by decree. Right.
Yes. Right. Right.
And I think religion in some way has played a role there, but the problem is that religion went off the rails when it became overly institutionalized and overly static.
It lost its
dynamic root to the original lesson. So like, you know, Jesus's teachings, for example, were very accurate, but then, you know, the one step removed from Jesus' ideas was the interpretation of Jesus' ideas, which is religion. And then another step removed is the institutionalization of the religion, which is just an interpretation of the core teaching. Right. So I feel like that nuance is really important. It's not that religion's the problem, but that the stultification of religion and the subsequent decree instead of the earning of authority, I think is a dangerous thing.
Right. And I think that, you know, when you, as you pointed out, the importance of the foundation, you know, the right brain, you know, intuitive, right brain is more kind of connected to the survival, like intuitive, pure consciousness. You know, that's the brain that tells us, like, when there is a fire, like, you know, you have to run, you know, you don't have to think it through, you know, you have to run, right? So that kind of instinctive wisdom, you know, that is the basis of our existence. And then out of which the left brain kind of is built. And then the left brain is actually where what psychologically understood as ego exists. That's where our conscious identity resides. And then so now I think the problem is that we somehow, like, you know, the modernization and industrialization, you know, push us toward the kind of develop this already left brain centered way of living, you know, like 9-to-5 jobs, and you know, you're plugged into technology all the time, and you are disconnected from your body, you know. So that kind of modern way of life created this imbalance, and that somehow, like, modern men and women become ones that are disconnected from our instinct, disconnected from our intuitive knowing, you know, and intuitive knowing as to like what is right and wrong. And it's also applies to our sense of morality. And then what we are seeing now, for instance, you know, during this pandemic, there is this engineered sense of morality, you know, what is right and wrong, instead of each person really coming to, you know, their own understanding. But this moral narrative is pushed forward through social media, and then they, you know, it's a kind of abstract sense of morality if you look at it, but they kind of believe in it, you know, just because the establishment said so, or, you know, media says so, or scientists says so. So I think that the problem really, like I said, it's that this imbalance, and somehow that we have, you know, created this already dependent on this rationality, and then, you know, and that kind of created, in my opinion, like wounded masculine. And the wounded masculine is the one that, I think that, you know, the masculine qualities that analysis or, you know, categorization, value judgment, and, you know, all the important attribute, but it's not, and ego is also an important part of our existence, mm-hmm, but if it doesn't recognize its relationship to the whole, then it's become tyrant. You know, it's kind of gets out of control and try to control and then try, you know, so that's kind of the wounded masculine archetype, in my opinion. And in order to heal that, you know, I think it's important to connect back to the origin, connect back to our instinct. And then, as you pointed out about the hierarchy, and then again, the hierarchy has a place, but I think that the, what I found troubling is that along with this our identification with the left brain, you know, left brain that categorizes, left brains that create the value judgment, so to speak, you know, is that this arbitrary form of hierarchy. So there is legitimate authority, legitimate hierarchy. And the legitimate hierarchy, in my opinion, is something like a meritocracy, right? Mm-hmm. The people have a certain different skills and talent, and then that organically emerged, the hierarchy organically emerged because mm-hmm. of what mm-hmm. each person can contribute to the society. And that's not the hierarchy imposed upon us from mm-hmm. someone else, you know, and arbitrarily defined. So that's a legitimate form of hierarchy that we need. And so it's again, it's the, and that legitimate form of a hierarchy emerges organically when we connect with the intuitive instinctive aspect, the connect with the hierarchy, I mean, the foundation, basically. Mm-hmm. And because mm-hmm. we don't have connection to the foundation currently, that we have this kind of hierarchy that is totally, you know, not connected to the natural order. Mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm, also yeah. ego that is disconnected and then getting out of control and to the point that it's trying to destroy the whole world, you know? So that's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, I think you touch on something really important there, which is the feminine masculine has a light and a shadow, right?
Yeah.
And when it mm-hmm, operates, right. You called it wounded, right? When it operates in the wounded form, it right. Devolves into something quite dark. See, yes. I've been of the opinion that as much as we've got a world in which we have static stultification and mm-hmm. these hierarchies by decree, right, what's right. happened is we've had the shadow of the feminine also infect these structures, which is because see tyranny, for example, is actually as far as I understand, tyranny is a feminine characteristic. Passive aggression, we're right, all in this right. together. Collectivism, right, yeah, right, deceit, right. like right. backstabbing and stuff like that. That right. is a very feminine characteristic, but it's a shadow feminine, right?
Yes.
And what's happened is like, I mean, you look at the people like that, what's her name? Jacinta Ardern in New Zealand, you know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, the donkey looking lady.
Oh, okay,
lady.
Okay, yeah.
She's a tyrannical psychopath who is right. basically a woman who is
right, right.
visibly feminine,
right,
but
right.
basically dons a fake masculine mask.
Right.
And not only is she fake shadow masculine in her operation, mm-hmm. but right. she injects passive aggression and tyranny right. and like, you know, I mean, right. she created a bureau of approved information in New Zealand. Oh, you know okay. what I mean? Like, right. so this is these tyrannical psychopaths, but that is mm-hmm. a very, it's the wounded feminine in action.
Right,
so yeah, right. we seem to the world seems to be kind of stuck between I guess you could call it a wounded masculine, but a very weak masculine, because a strong right, masculine right, right. Exactly. provides frame, right?
Yes,
and a framed strong masculine is not looking to impose, it just right. is looking to be a wall.
Right.
That the right. feminine, that the chaos, that the instinct, mm-hmm. that the intuition right. can build around, but it offers just purely a wall and a structure,
right?
So that freedom can operate within, and that's a true masculine. Whereas what we've got now is this weak masculine that is allowed basically mindless chaos and tyranny to emerge,
right?
With no consequences, because that's another thing of the shadow feminine is that it doesn't believe in consequence. It believes.
And also, I think
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, good point that I want to touch on the shadow side of the feminine and the wounded feminine, so to speak, is that, you know, this the archetype of the great mother. And that's kind of like a great mother devours, you know, everyone. It's kind of like turn everybody into the sameness, you know, turn it into it. And then, for instance, the culture that I come from in Japan, it's very much governed by the principle of the great mother. And what it does is it's a collectivist culture in nature. Mm-hmm. And so that it basically prevent anyone from dissenting, you know, dissenting from this harmony. And that if you wanted to assert your individuality, then you would be knocked down. You know, you will basically seen as that you are disrupting this harmony, this oneness that we create. Everybody's the same, everybody's equal. And then that's what we are seeing now, for instance, you know, this ideology of communism, you know, being revived and coming from East and now being, you know, exported to the West, right? So that's a good example of the great mother, you know, the wounded feminine archetype is kind of reactivated, and that we are swept, you know, collectively humanity is swept by it, right? But I think, what I found interesting is that it's both, you know, that this wounded feminine and the wounded masculine both really come from the fact that we haven't attained the balance within ourselves. Totally. And that there is this concerted effort to, I think that, you know, those in power or, you know, those who stay at the narrative that, you know, I see the efforts to keep us, identify with this ego-based identity, identify with this left brain, you know, this paradigm of projecting our power outside and then trusting the external authorities and never kind of claiming our own sovereignty, you know. So that's the paradigm that fiat system operates. So that there is this, you know, with the use of tech and then also the, banks, I mean, central banks, and now they're creating, you know, CDBCs, so that they wanted to keep us, right, remain in this narrow kind of restricted sense of identity, like in the movie, the film, The Matrix, they want us to, you know, they want Neo to be Thomas Anderson rather than Neo, right? So that Neo had this, the two identities, basically two personalities, so to speak, you know. So one hand, like he's a computer hacker at night, right? Named with alias Neo, but during the day, he's working at the IT company and he's a Thomas Anderson. And then Agent Smith, you know, he always, when he interacted with Neo, you know, he always called him Thomas Anderson, right? The Agent Smith said Thomas Anderson. And then there's one time that Neo basically kind of talked back to him saying, my name is Neo, you know? So that's, I think, what's happening in our world, that there is this, you know, those in power. I mean, I don't like to say like those in power because they really don't have power, but you know what I mean? You know, those parasites, or, you know, they are the one who want to kind of remain restricted and just to operate in this left side of the brain and not be able to fully claim our own, you know, whole brain function and claim the consciousness that actually controls the brain, you know, consciousness is behind it, you know. And so it's not like the brain's doing things like as materialists like to think. So that's, you know, as I see it, what's happening. And the way they do it is that they basically keep us be separated between this masculine principle and the feminine principle so that we would not be able to integrate those aspects of ourselves. And this is what Jung talks about, you know, as a part of individuation process. He pointed out this process of integration of our own shadow, right? So then we have, you know, our identification with left side of the brain and the ego that creates shadow, creates the part of ourselves that we don't acknowledge that exists within us. And part of the shadow involves the, you know, gender-based or, you know, the feminine masculine archetypical divide that lives within. And then there is a shadow of the, you know, dark side of ourselves, you know, like evil or, you know, all the things that we don't want to admit that exist in us, right? So and that created kind of like a wounded masculine, wounded feminine. And then, of course, that in our materialistic culture, that trying to kind of define us based on this physical, sorry, based on physical existence, biological reality, which is partially true. You know, if you are born as women, you know, you are women, you know, and if you are born as, you know, with penis, then you are man. And now the liberals, you know, there's critical theories and they like say, are you really a woman? Do you want to be a man? You know, there's that confusion going on. But that's, you know, that's the physical reality that, that, you know, it's a, right? Like you won't mess with it, right? But then on top of it, there is something more, which is the psychological reality of our totality of psyche, you know, which contains masculine, both masculine and feminine. So I think that the, this different, you know, that at the level of consciousness, at the level of biological, physical existence, there is a mixed up. And of course, that those in power, they deny the existence of consciousness. They deny the existence of free will. They think of us as like advanced, basically social animals.
That, yeah.
Right. Robots, social animals that don't have a free will, don't have a consciousness. So they wanted to basically control us, right? So, So that's why they are basically pushing forward this materialistic kind of viewpoint, and that people who are caught up with this left brain identity, based identity, they solely see themselves as physical beings. And then they, you know, so that's why they you know, they want to, some of them maybe get confused, you know, about this, the, you know, the other, what other sex represent, basically, you know, if you are born as a man, but you have this feminine quality at the soul level. And instead of looking at that quality and then trying to integrate that part into themselves, they might get confused. They might think, oh, maybe I'm a feminine. Maybe I am, I'm supposed to be woman. You know what I mean? At the, you know, yeah. So that confusion. Yeah.
Let me throw something in there, because the empirical piece is true. So, but I would argue potentially that the relinquishing mm-hmm. of power,
right,
is the relinquishing of power a transformation of the strong protective masculine into a dependent feminine. So it is empirical in nature, but it seems as though it's an attempt to dissolve the ego in the and the individual into the mass right. of the collective. Because
what
seems to be happening is like a strong masculine, and again, the masculine is more ego driven and it's more individuated, right? The feminine right. is more collective. So it seems right. to be this relinquishing of power to the state or an authority, and the elimination of individuation. So we're all the same. Biology doesn't exist.
Right.
Empirical doesn't exist.
Right.
To me, almost that is, I don't know, like I agree that we've swung too far in the empirical side of things, but it seems as though this is actually a de-evolution into feminine tyranny of basically complete relativism, because relativism is also more feminine in nature, right? There is
no difference and right.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we're all whatever we want to be, whenever we want to be that. And I right. think, yeah, I don't know, because there seems to be a couple viewpoints here, is that it's not, you know, the easiest way that I mean, the way I've tried to make sense of all of this is that it's not so much how do I put this? I feel like it's the fault of the masculine to a large degree, not mm-hmm. from the excessive imposition of the empirical viewpoint of the world, but from a lack of strength and frame mm-hmm. that has enabled the tyrannical feminine to infect the system and create meaninglessness everywhere. So that the I would support that with this idea of the feminine is that which takes small problems and makes it large, right? That's what, so the feminine is a magnifier, right? So if, you know, I mean, I know this with my girlfriend is like the smallest thing. And if it's that time of the month, it's the biggest problem in the world, right? So that's what like the feminine does. And the masculine takes big problems and makes them small. And what have we got today? Every little tiny stupid meaningless problem is blown completely out of proportion. So we've basically have no way of like, I don't know, like everything is a problem. Everything is a big issue. Everything is the end of the world. Everything is a hysteria. Everything is crazy. Everything is larger than life. And it's extraordinarily feminine. And there's very few men today that are in their masculine that can say the word no, that can draw a fucking line and just say that is not going to happen. I am an individual. I am a man. And this is the line that is not crossed, irrespective of how many problems it is for we're all in this together or whatever other bullshit statement is made. So I agree that it's the world is overly empirical, but I think it seems to me that we're more in a state of shadow feminine destruction than we are in shadow masculine destruction, because there's no men left. They're all boys. Like all the men are fucking boys. Right. There's no strong men left to say no. I mean, the closest thing to a male leader is,
we just say that the, you know, for men to, you know, be able to say no, you know, that's based on his sense of knowing truth, right? And then what determines for him to say this is the right thing for me to do. Would you say that ability is come from the intuitive element? Like, you know, you would know it like at the intuitive level, not because the authority told me right? And then this masculine, you know, the man's ability to say, you know what, politician tell me to do this, wear a mask, or you know, my father says this, or like I will be thrown out to jail if I don't do this. But I must do this because I know this is right for me to do. And so that's kind of like the ability to trust your own sense of knowing and revolt against the external authority, right? And that very ability for us to trust the intuition, in my opinion, that is the feminine. That's the feminine principle, because that we are trusting the intuition, the trusting the something that directly speaks to us, rather than, you know, going through the analysis or going through, you know, the trust in the external authorities.
But see, trusting in external authority, is that a masculine thing or is that a feminine thing?
I think it's ego-based. I mean, okay, so if I you know, maybe describe the masculine as more like the how we operate with the ego through our ego identification. And that, you know, it kind of which is different than, the fact that, okay, so the ego identification is basically you are how you are defined by the society. That's how I kind of describe the ego identification. So when you are born, right, you are born into a culture, born into a particular family unit. So then your identity, your conscious identity, is not something that really, you know, is defined from within, right? Because your parents would call you your name, hey Alex, you know, and then trend look at you. So you are perceived. You are not the subject, but you are, you know, being perceived as, you know, this placed into somebody's perception as an object, you know, unless that you are born into a family who has this full consciousness and really respect you as someone who already has innate character, and then, you know, try to educate you in a way that, you know, Plato had Plato's kind of a way of approaching education, you know, to basically withdraw something that is already in us, you know, then most of us are not fortunate to have that kind of wise parent, you know, so that we were molded by this cultural influence, social influence, and that we have this, we developed this personality, basically, right? Personality that basically people around us tell us who we are. So then, okay, so I'm a Japanese person, I'm this, I'm that. And then there comes to that, then we develop this, our identification with that personality. And then there comes the time that we realize we are, you know, that personality, you know, that is perceived in the object subject spread, that is only the half of me. If you know what I mean, you know, that who I am actually transcends this dichotomy of subject and object, that, you know, but until like we develop certain level of consciousness, we cannot assert ourselves as a subject. I know it's kind of a little complex,
I'm following. Yeah. So it's kind of, if I could see if I'm on the right track here, is that the ego is the nurture component of our psyche, and right. the component.
Right. And the ego is a mask, basically. It's a persona. It's the interface with the outside world. So you have to have ego for someone to perceive me, right? So for instance, I could be like infinite, you know, there are many, many potentials of who I am, and then who I am cannot be expressed in just one personality. Like, you know, like I could be a different person with my friend than I could be with my teacher, or, you know, I could be with my parents, right? So we all have different masks, you know, personality, persona,
and
we
just,
where, you know, but then we do this process of wearing the mask unconsciously. It's not like, okay, so today I'm going to hang out with my friend, so let's pick the appropriate mask, and I'm going to wear this. We don't do this, right? We automatically know how to show up in relationship, and then wear the appropriate mask, right? But then who is the person that has consistent awareness, consistent consciousness behind these masks, right? Because that I could only express myself and appear in your perception through my selected mask. Then you could perceive me. Oh, okay, here is Nozomi. This person is that. And that we need to have this, right? To create certainty and efficiency and things like that, you know? But then, if you know what I mean, that there is this person who is wearing many masks, having many different personalities, and so basically what I'm saying is that's the ego identity. That's ego, our conscious identity, because we know what they are, like what, you know, our personalities are in different situations. That's something that we are, you know, most of us are conscious, you know. And so that's what I say. So that's kind of like a masculine, the ego identification is the masculine. And then what is needed is, you know, I think at some point we go through this crisis, like we go through some kind of an ego-ness, that we realize there's something behind these masks, you know, and that's who I am truly. You know, and that's something that maybe people can only experience at a certain, you know, like a mystical experience or the religious experience that William James talks about, you know. Then we have a glimpse of what that is. Like, wow, you know, there is somebody behind that I'm not even aware of. And then I am, most of the time I'm being programmed. I am like, you know, operating like a machine, you know, just doing things, and then I'm unconsciously in relating to people and then showing up with certain character, you know? And so, and Jung talks about that's absolutely necessary. We need to establish this ego consciousness as a part of individuation process. And then we become individual, we become concrete beings, right? And a part of being concrete includes our gender difference. So that being a woman is different than, you know, have a different experience than being a man. And that adds uniqueness to me, you know. And being Japanese, I mean, for instance, you know, in my case, being Japanese obviously gives me unique flavor that other people don't have. But that's not all who I am, right? I'm not kind of a, there is something behind me. Like I'm more than just Japanese person. I'm just more than woman, right? So that being, you know, the, that transcends cultural difference, transcend gender, you know, all that stuff. So that, you know, one would call maybe spirit, you know? So that's that, you know, but we have to find a way to embody the spirit in many different personalities. And that connection, you know, that Jung maybe says the ego self axis, you know, the ego, you know, the Jung has this idea of self with capital S, you know, self is the kind of like a higher self or the, our, true being or whatever, you know, and the goal of individuation is first to establish your ego and then make a connection, you know, to self and then create this ego self axis. And then part of the process is that we need to basically integrate everything that, that we, you know, rejected out of ourselves in the process of becoming concrete, unique being. So that's, for me, the ultimate integration of a masculine and feminine aspect within ourselves. Then we attain the totality of psyche without losing our individuality. I think that what you are saying about the wounded feminine, our tyrant, you know, the feminine is really, the without, it's kind of like a, without acknowledging this unique individuality or without acknowledging the importance of the ego, the great mother tried to squash everyone, like trying to dissolve everybody into oneness so that then we basically become like, you know, like infant or something, like a child, you know, and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, doesn't know who we are. Like back to square one, like regressing exactly. back to who, you know what I mean? Like undifferentiated.
Yeah, instead of, yeah, instead right. of an integration between the ego and the self, it's an elimination of the ego.
Right.
And you're left with right. nothing. You're left
yeah,
with.
Right. That you become like the, yeah, the animal state, basically. The,
yes.
The undifferentiated, yeah. the masses, right? So that's
yes.
basically what's happened. Like I said, what's happening with this ideology of communism. But at the same time that there is this, wounded masculine, you know, archetype is activated. And what it's doing is that it's trying to cut us off from, the universal aspect, you know, the for us to attain the totality of psyche. And so you see that part too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's, and then the way it does is that it's, reinforces our identification with this ego-based sense of identity. And then pulls our attention to the external, what is outside, whether that is celebrities or what politicians are doing or, you know, whatever's happening outside of us. And then the things are projected out. So then we do not turn inwardly to engage with the process of integration. So the good example of it is it's in the political arena that, you know, there's this, controversial figures, you know, being picked like Trump, for instance, and then they create a mass projection and then liberals react, you know, project everything that they don't like about them. I mean, about, I guess themselves, you know, onto politician. And then they would just, you know, engage in this fight, you know, this battle between good and evil kind of thing. And then they don't realize that what they are projecting out actually are inside, within themselves. So they have to look up, they have to integrate into themselves. So yes, I think it's both the wounded feminine and the wounded masculine, both of them are the issues. And the, but I think that it's this imbalance really, I think right now it's comes from the, how, you know, our modern society is very scary, cut off from nature, cut off from the, you know, foundation of our reality, you know, instinct, the basis, you know, instincts that could be turned into intuition, you know,
Is there, okay, I had a couple questions here, but one of them, and it's right now that is, I think, a good time to ask. I think there is, but I'm curious to see, do you think there is a difference between instinct and intuition?
I think that, okay, so this is interesting. I've been thinking about this for a long time. You know, many people like talk about it as a kind of an instinct and intuition are two separate things. And then psychologists, you know, many of them kind of think that instincts are more like a savage, like quality, like it's like a part of like animals. And then somewhat, I think Western civilization discarded instinct, made it to be something inferior, and inferior to reason or rationality or, you know, the other kind of faculty that they consider to be more superior, right? But I think that intuition is I think the instinct is the basis of intuition. That's how I see it, because instinct is something like gut feeling. Like we have, like, you know, when we may see someone, you know, that we cannot trust, and then that person, you know, like psychopaths, let's say, you know, who are very charming and on the surface it looks trustworthy, right? And then like you, oh, like he's a nice guy, you know, he seems to be a nice guy. But then somewhere, like, you know, you feel this weird, you know, hint, like, oh, you know, I don't know why, but I cannot trust this person, right? That's kind of like, and it's a gut feeling, like you really feel it at the kind of at the guts that there is something about this person that I shouldn't trust. But so that, you know, at the physiological level, it's comes through instinct. You know, that's all animals are equipped with instinct. And there is a wisdom in instinct that, you know, has a protection mechanism, right? So that's why, like, animals know what is when there is a threat, that they can just react appropriately. And that's the wisdom inherent in nature. And that, you know, nature protects its own creatures that way. And then we humans are equipped with that instinct as well. And that instinct could be transformed into intuition as well, I think. And what's happening is that our culture basically suppresses the instinct and then replaces it with abstract sense of morality, you know, what is right and wrong. That is really, you know, like a Judeo-Christian based good and evil kind of thing. And then whoever, you know, place themselves to be a position of authority, they define what is right and wrong, you know, and then they would engage in censorship and say, oh, you are wrong. You can't speak like that. This is good, you know, and then people subscribe to that abstract morality instead of trusting their own instinct, you know. So, I mean, and then I've seen that repeatedly, you know, done that this basically manipulation of instinct, you know, at the many, many different levels. And you know, like, for instance, in 2007-8, you know, during the financial crisis in the US, that, you know, the government basically bailed out banks, and then you know, the mortgage scandal, right? Mortgage fraud. And then American taxpayers, they felt that there's something wrong, that they felt that this is wrong, but they couldn't even articulate why they feel this way. And there's one hand that's media narrative saying, no, this is what's necessary. You have to do, you know, we have to bail out banks. But then there's the dissonance experienced by middle-class America, that government says this, but then there's something wrong that we feel at the gut level, right? So that's, again, it's the people responding through their own instinctive wisdom, I guess, you know? And then I think that the fiat system systematically targeted our instinct, manipulate our instinct so that mm-hmm, we do not mm-hmm. trust our instinct. And then one hand, this is an interesting thing, with the one hand, they treat us like animals, right? Treat us as masses that don't have any individuality. But at the same time, they would actually, they cut us off from the instinct, you know, the animalistic part of ourselves at the same time, right? So that's what I found interesting. And so they, you know, and in a sense that when I look at what they're doing, is that they want to make us be like a robot. So they move society into a more mechanical, you know, into creating a mechanical system. And then we would basically become automatons and, you know, push toward kind of like a animal survival level. So it's a kind of interesting thing that what they're doing. And then the manipulation of instinct, what I find is that, you know, of course that we have an instinct, survival instinct, and, you know, the instinct to secure, food and shelter, you know, something that Abraham Maslow described in the hierarchies of need, you know, so we have this necessity, right? And then we all have, instincts, and then instincts to tell us how to get them, or how to protect ourselves, how to preserve our life. And also we have this instincts for religion. You know, the Jung talks about religious instinct, that we have the innate kind of instinct to seek for something larger than ourselves, seek for meaning and purpose in life, which other animals don't have, right? So that, like, you know, dogs, you know, dogs are not thinking about improving themselves, right? You know, whereas the humans, you know, we want to improve ourselves. We wanted to remake ourselves in the image of God or divine or whoever that, you know, we aspire ourselves to be, which, you know, is something distinctly human, defines the human experience. So then, you know, basically those who control the system, they understand this. They understand us. You know, they understand our human, I mean, instincts and everything. And then they basically deploy this B.F. Skinner's behaviorism and then create the tendencies of reinforcement so that we are manipulated, you know, our instincts are manipulated and then we are misguided, you know, the price signal distorted. So then we do things that are actually harmful to us. We eat things that are, you know, not nutritious and, you know, we take drugs that are harmful, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So again, you know, when I say the feminine principles, one of the important feminine principle is our connection to instinct, the base level, foundation level, existence, you know. So maybe it's maybe different than how generally, you know, how people generally talk about the difference between masculine and the feminine. The way I describe the archetypes is like, you know, the masculine, is more kind of left brain oriented and it's connected to abstraction, connected to rationality, whereas the feminine, it's connected to right brain. It's about the our connection to instinct. Natural ability and something that connect us at the biological level. And
yeah, a few threads I want to pull on there. So for me, I've always viewed instinct and intuition slightly differently. Maybe not always, but kind of I had this epiphany recently, and it's that my sense, and this is my instinct speaking, is that I think instinct is more masculine because it seems to be more of a physical predatory response, whereas intuition seems to me the feminine version of instinct. So maybe they're like the same thing, but like, for example, men have really poor intuition, really bad intuition. Like,
right.
But women have incredible intuition. Like women can perceive things connect things in such a way that no man can. Like I know my girlfriend, again, she's a perfect example of an incredibly intuitive woman who, I don't have to tell her shit and she just like perceives and understands things. But instinctually, like walk across the street and she's not looking anywhere, the car's going to fucking run her over, but she doesn't even realize, right? Or put her in a car to drive and, you know, she'll almost hit the car next to her. And unless I grab the steering wheel, she didn't know that she was going to do that. But me as a man, I seem to have this instinct. Like I can sense trouble, you know, or maybe sensing trouble is actually more intuitive, to be honest. But instinct seems to me a kind of a hidden, deep physical ability to react.
Right.
Whereas an intuition seems to be a hidden, deep psychological ability to comprehend. And I think they're two different things, or maybe there may be a masculine, feminine variation of the same thing that is like within us.
Right. So, I mean, we both have, men and, women have, you know, both intuition and instinctual ability. Right. And then, you know, points us to mother's instinct. Mother knows, like, you know, when her baby is crying or like needs, food, you know, she knows it instinctively. It's not so much like, so that's a kind of a good example. Right. And then I think that our culture also train us, like condition us in a certain way, like, you know, to depend on logics and rationality, for instance. And, you know, so oftentimes I think that people have this idea, like they know exactly what is right. Like, you know, okay, yeah, I should do this, or, they know intuitively, like that something that bypasses this logical analytic ability to figure mm-hmm. things out. But then we override the initial knowing, and then we kind of like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that, and start doing research and things like that. So I think that that's a cultural conditioning, right? And I think that as I said earlier, that the way that this existing fiat system works is that it destroys our connection to instinct or intuition. You know, this kind of a sense of way of knowing that does not require third party, basically, right? Because the instinct and intuition, both of them, it's direct liberation of knowledge, direct wisdom, right? That you don't, mm-hmm. intuition is something that it's not like you have to ask someone or you have to research, you know, it comes. It's more mm-hmm. like the, mm-hmm. you are deceiving, right? Mm-hmm. And the ego, I think, is trying to get the information. It's more like expanded energy. It's like, you know, you're researching things or you're trying to figure things out. So you, you know, you create effort. Right. And then there, of course, that's needed, you know, when we research and things, that process is important. But at the same time, that there is other way of knowing that does not require effort, that comes to us, that is revealed to us. That's, I think, mm-hmm. more mm-hmm. like instinct and intuition. Intuition at the higher form, you know, because instincts only deal with the physical realm, you know, physical level mm-hmm. knowledge. Like there is fire, there is this, and that's threat, danger, you know, but intuition, I think it's something that goes beyond the physical boundaries of information. So something totally. That would like to happen in the future, for instance, or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's not the tie to the physical existence, but then, oh, you know, I have a sense that maybe if I go to this, get on this airplane, maybe I might, you know, something happen. Then I, mm-hmm. you know, it's intuition, mm-hmm. right? Or instinct, I mean, whichever you'd like to say, but it's something that hasn't happened, maybe, you know, maybe yep. so your girlfriend might be able to say like something about the future that has happened, then I have this weird feeling about, you know, the future or whatever. And whereas mm-hmm. that you might maybe have this physical immediate, oh my gosh, there is a fire. I feel it. Like I cannot tell, but I think there is fire or something like that. Right. So it's kind of like, I think connected, but it's works in a different dimension, or the information that each faculty perceives is in a different domain.
Yeah, I like that framing actually. So yeah. you know, instinct is, you know, more seems to be more biological, whereas
immediate circumstance, right?
Yeah, exactly. Intuition seems to be right. more transcendent. It's like right. it's connected to something else,
right? And which, it's not which, some, yeah, and go, it's go not ahead, something. It's not something that we need to be taught about this. I mean,
yeah.
You know, like indigenous people, for instance, you know, the people who live close to nature, they always trust their intuition or, you know, instinct, and then they built the civilization based on it, right? Mm-hmm. And this is only the Western civilization. It's our modern society that discarded instinct as a foundation and then built this kind of a system that our mind or the rational mind think it's good, you know? So that, for instance, this idea of democracy, again, you know, founding fathers, you know, had created this managed democracy, right? We call it representative democracy, but it's not really democratic about it, right? But what they did was that they were fearful about irrational masses, right? So they mm-hmm. were against this the uprising of populace, and this, because that we cannot trust this irrational masses that, you know, would act, you know, out of control or whatever. And again, that's the distrust of instinct, distrust of something that cannot be verified by logic, perhaps, you know, and then they created this institutional hierarchies of representative democracy. And then what it does is it basically, it's a top down, you know, hierarchically, you know, organized society, and that people on the bottom, they have to obey the rules that the, you know, people on the top make, you know, right? And then, so again, that's cut us off from our instinct. But, you know, I think what Bitcoin does really is that it's acknowledges, I think, that this inherent wisdom within ourselves, and that is something that is already innate, something that we don't have to earn, something that we don't have to, you know, get from outside, but that's something already we are equipped with. Everybody is equipped with, And that's why I think that I kind of quoted Thomas Jefferson in the article that, you know, when he said that, you know, the all men are created equal as of equal rights, not equality as like everybody the same, right? But that he was basically saying that we hold these truths to be self-evident. The all men are created equal, you know, and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property. And that's basically recognizing this innate wisdom, you know, that we do not need the third parties. We do not need these institutions to know what is right and wrong, that each person has this ability to come to their own conclusion about what is right and wrong and act out of the conscience. So I think that was the original impulse of the behind the United States. And somehow it's kind of, you know, as we have seen throughout history, somehow it's kind of gone to the different direction. But
it's interesting that you bring in that. So for me, the founding fathers had the foresight and the instinct, like all the innate mm-hmm. wisdom when forming mm-hmm. the Constitution. So for me, that is actually an example of mm-hmm. the strong masculine. Was the strong masculine said that we find these truths to be evident, right. You know, the fact mm-hmm. that, you know, free men right. have the capacity yeah, to yeah. interact with right, each other. So right. they created a very broad structure, like a broad frame.
Right.
And it's, enabled it's a good point. Everything to happen in between.
Good
right?
point. Good point. And I think that's, you know, I like how you described as a strong masculine, you know, which mm-hmm. is kind of a different than, I mean, it's I agree that it's an example of a strong masculine. And I say Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, I mean, I don't maybe include Alexander Hamilton for this, but it's more like the founding fathers who recognized the importance of Bill of Rights, basically, you know, and the other founding fathers like Alexander Hamilton, who said that, you know, that we don't need the Bill of Rights, you know, the Constitution is perfect enough, right? But then Jefferson is the one who said, no, we have to have protection against the government, and we have to secure individual rights. And I think that mm-hmm. the Thomas Jefferson kind of represents the strong masculine in this, because he recognized, I think, the wisdom inherent in nature, you know, wisdom in this, you know, that we all have this ability to know what is true, right? And that we don't need to have a statement or the God or, you know, religious authorities or people outside tell us what to do. And so to acknowledge that, you know, wisdom, you know, the innate wisdom and to say, you know, we have to build a system of governance based on that wisdom and not by man-made law, so to speak, that try to govern other people, if you know what I mean.
Totally.
So I think you're right. I think that's, he's a good example of somebody who has the strong masculine. And then again, the maybe the definition of a strong masculine is somebody who recognizes the merit of the other quality, you know, the
absolutely.
Feminine quality. And that
yeah,
to kind
absolutely.
Of, you know, try to fight against it or whatever, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The perfect example of a strong masculine is someone who is able to stand strong and firm
right.
in the storm. And
exactly,
you know,
right.
and that's what actually, like, so speaking about, like, even what attracts women to men is, like, women right. are not attracted to little boys who want to please and, like, you know, shift right, themselves right. around. What women are right. attracted to is a man who can stand
right.
his ground
right. mm-hmm.
and allow the feminine to use her intuition and to use right. her innate wisdom to right. be, like, you know, flourishing right. and to be up and down in emotion and to do all the chaotic
exactly.
things that a woman
right.
does, but a man can stand his ground.
Right.
And see, if you look at the Alexander Hamilton archetype, he's more like mm-hmm. a boy. Instead of being able to stand his
right,
ground
right.
in
right.
the chaos of existence, he mm-hmm. wanted to manage everything.
Right,
to,
control,
to minimize.
Right, right. So,
yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Control.
So that's like the undead masculine is over-controlling, like,
correct.
Because the someone who tried to control or govern other people or have a power over someone, that comes from insecurity, right? If
insecurity,
someone is
exactly.
right,
yes.
secure and confident, then you don't feel like you have to manage and control
exactly.
other people.
Exactly.
So I think it's you hit the nail. I think that's, you know, the strong masculine is someone who is confident, you know, and that, you know, basically accept who he is. And then because he's not insecure, that there isn't the urge to pursue for power, you know, grab power and you know, dominate other people or, you know, yeah. So, yeah, you made a good point. And I think that structure that you pointed out, that the ability to create the structure that is needed. And then the Thomas Jefferson, for instance, you know, the idea basically, as I understand that, you know, Jefferson and Franklin, they interacted with Native Americans, and then they learned you know, how the Iroquois tribes, you know, the part of Native Americans, five nations, the how they organize, self-organize their society, you know, and that and then so they wanted to kind of implement that kind of their idea of democracy, but then the way Native Americans are doing, obviously, it works at the small scale, like tribes, you know, where people know each other and, you know, we can use trust, you know, but that doesn't scale. And they were using wampum, you know, wampum, the, you know, the artifact fact from nature, but that's easily broken and it's not secure. And I think what Satoshi Nakamoto did was that he brought structure, he applied the technological knowledge to, you know, make it scale, that we actually have a chance to create, you know, the new laws that are immutable, you know, to secure individual liberties and life and happiness and pursuit of property, you know. So that's the masculine frame, right? That somebody brought structure, right?
Absolutely.
And they built something. And then in that, you know, the knowledge is used in service to ideals, right? Mm-hmm. And that comes from, again, strong masculine rather than, you know, the insecure wounded masculine, you know, who wanted, wounded masculine would be like, you want to use knowledge to dominate other people, yes, or control, yeah, other people, right? So, yeah. So I think that it's a good example that Thomas Jefferson is a strong masculine. I agree.
Beautiful.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read them each week and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating plague that is consuming our world.